From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Arkansas state senators on Monday passed a bill to ban access to gender-affirming care for transgender minors. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee recently signed a bill banning transgender kids from playing sports in schools. The Alabama legislature advanced a bill outlawing hormone treatments for transgender youth. These are just a few of the disturbing efforts by GOP-dominated state legislatures to target trans youth. In the past 3 months, there has been a record-breaking increase in such legislation, with more than 80 bills being introduced, the largest number of transphobic bills in the history of the nation. My guest is Jules Gill Peterson, associate professor at the University of Pittsburgh. She is the author of the award-winning book, Histories of the Transgender Child. Welcome to the program, Jules.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about the fact that the Republican Party appears to have picked this as the issue on which to fight their latest culture war. However, of course, it's been at least 4 years of pretty strong attacks against the transgender community under Trump. And even before that, of course, there's always been a struggle, not just for visibility, but for dignity, right? But it seems as though there's just this huge escalation very recently.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, in some ways, it couldn't come at a worse time. I think a lot of folks in the trans community are still reeling after the last 4 years. And in some ways, the Trump administration's anti-trans efforts, due to perhaps their sort of general political incompetency, you know, a lot of them didn't really end up making it into practice. And of course, there was an important Supreme Court decision last summer in which the court affirmed some of the employment rights of trans individuals. However, what we're seeing is, of course, on the state level, as is often the case, the GOP is much more successful at pursuing an anti-trans agenda or an extreme white wing agenda than they ever are at the federal level. And so I think in some ways, you know, we're seeing the culmination of efforts that have been building for the last 4 or 5 years, certainly since North Carolina was the first state to pass its infamous bathroom bill, its anti-trans bathroom bill in 2016. You know, trans activists have been sounding the alarm ever since then, saying, you know, this is on its way, it's coming down the pipeline. We've actually seen a number of states, especially South Dakota, sort of serving as a laboratory, testing out bills that ultimately failed over the past few years. And then there was one in Idaho that was passed and now is tied up in court. And some of the right-wing groups involved in supporting that legislation in Idaho are actually the ones funding and circulating the sort of template bill that is sort of spread almost like wildfire across, you know, well over half the states now. So, you know, in some ways it hasn't taken trans people by surprise, but perhaps the intensity of it couldn't come at a worse time. And I think a lot of folks are waking up this week in the wake of some of these bills actually passing and wondering, oh my gosh, how did we get here? What can we do now? How can we actually protect the rights of trans children and protect trans people more generally? Because this is really somewhat of an unprecedented assault in terms of just the magnitude of the bills and the severity of what they propose to do in terms of criminalizing basic access to healthcare and also equal participation in education. So this really is, I think, in some ways, a very dark moment, even if we sort of might point out that it seems that the GOP's strategy here is really to prepare for the 2022 midterms, to raise cash, and to sort of pass bills that they don't even expect to really make it into law. But even if it's sort of a cold political calculus on their end, the stakes are very high, particularly for youth. So it's a really troubling time.
So this is, as you said, is a common trend. This is the kind of thing that the Republican Party likes to do. The bathroom bills were a big one, but it's used this same strategy on things like abortion and gun rights, et cetera, or the right to just, you know, have access to as many guns as possible. So many different sort of cookie cutter bills that the Republican Party, because they have more success at controlling state legislatures or certainly hold state legislatures in a more stable sustainable way. They find a success at doing that. They often will purposefully pass bills in order to overturn legal precedents by pushing things all the way to the Supreme Court. So the bathroom access was a big part of it. But now they're taking aim at trans kids, especially transgender girls, in sports. I mean, it just, and of course, the bathroom bills were also aimed at kids in school. But the danger, as you said, of this cold calculus is that it fuels an existing, very life and death sort of transphobia that we have in this country, right? Kids get driven to suicide, bullying, and other hate crimes can be incredibly physically dangerous, right?
That's right. You know, it's the height of irony and hypocrisy, but it's a very cruel hypocrisy when we see, for example, the governor of Mississippi, upon signing an anti-trans sports bill, you know, proclaimed that he was proud to defend the rights of women and girls. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, how can one claim to be protecting girls and women by enacting legislation that specifically discriminates and targets vulnerable young girls and puts them in more dangerous situations? And one of the ways that I think these legislators are getting away with this is pretending that trans children are totally brand new, that they've never been in school before, we've never seen them go to the doctor before, right? And as a historian who spent extensive time researching the actual history of trans children, you know, nothing could be less true. Trans kids have been around as long as trans people have been around. They actually predate even the word transgender. They predate many of the medical interventions, you know, that some of these other bills are trying to enshrine and ban. But also, you know, I found evidence as far back as the 1930s of trans girls going to school as girls with the support of their family, their community, and their teachers, using the right restroom, participating in extracurricular activities. I mean, this is almost 90 years ago, right? So there's nothing new. Trans kids have been going to school for decades. They've been in our communities. They already are in our communities, but now they are walking around with a target painted on their back, right? And I think one thing, you know, that's important to underline is they're sort of setting up this hypothetical scenario, right, that completely denies the reality of trans girlhood, because they won't even refer to trans girls as girls, right? We've instead seen the popularization of this really incendiary language, calling girls biological males, mm-hmm. conjuring this fantasized male predator. And we're talking about young girls here. There's nothing biologically male about them. It doesn't even make any sense empirically. And no, you know, doctor would ever support that kind of language. But what it's really serving to do is take these girls out of the group who deserve protection and actually make them more dangerous. And we already know this because trans children face an incredible amount of bullying and peer violence at school. And when, you know, school administrators, it's not part of their job to protect those girls when they don't have the mandate to do that, then they're going to turn a blind eye to it. And we already know this because it's happened to so many trans adults. You know, I could share any number of stories of my experience in high school, which was very much like the way these bills want high school to be run, where it was impossible for me to get the support of teachers or adults to protect me from bullying, sexual harassment, sexual assault, and abuse, because it wasn't registered as mattering. I wasn't being counted as a girl. And so I think that's actually basically these bills want to push us back in time. They're setting up this idea that there's a hypothetical threat happening right now that doesn't actually exist, right? And when you talk to these legislators, as many journalists have done, reaching out to them, you know, they'll ask, okay, so you're proposing this bill to ban transgender participation in sports. How much of an issue is that in your state? And most of these lawmakers will admit they've never heard of any issue with transgender participation in sports in their state. And actually, they've never heard of any issue around trans healthcare in their state. And so they don't actually know any trans children. They've never spoken to any or their families. They're legislating completely without the benefit of any education here, and certainly none of the science, but also none of the statistics about violence against trans girls in particular. Young trans girls and trans women are extremely vulnerable to sexual harassment and sexual violence because it's not taken seriously.
Right.
And that to me is one of the most sort of cruel kinds of parts of these bills.
Right. If they wanted to actually address threats facing children, that is the place, the actual threats facing transgender youth. Let's talk about South Dakota, where you said these bills have been, a test case in that state. They've been defeated. If South Dakota has been seen as a testing ground for the bills themselves, can it be a testing ground for defeating the bills at the state level? What did you learn? What can you tell us about what happened in South Dakota in particular? You know, what sort of opposition did those bills face? And can that be replicated?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, we were lucky to see it was sort of a strange way that the most recent bill in South Dakota was defeated, because the governor had sort of sent it back to the legislature and they didn't end up modifying the bill in time. So it sort of died procedurally, which is often the way that these bills end up being defeated, is procedurally. And, you know, South Dakota, you know, the reason why it's sort of been this laboratory for white extremist right wing bills is that it's a pretty small state. You know, it has a small population, and so it's very sensitive to outside money. So conservative groups have been targeting the South Dakota legislature for many years with outside money in order to, you know, basically test run new kinds of legislation, you know, with the most minimum cost required and the lowest stakes possible before spreading that around the country to bigger, you know, more populated states. And so, you know, the interesting thing is, of course, they've been trying these bills for so many years, there's very organized opposition to them. But so far, it's very local opposition, right? Most of the people showing up to testify against these bills are trans youth and are the parents of trans youth. And as well, you have legal advocates, folks from the ACLU and other civil rights groups. But it's been a fairly narrow opposition in the sense that it's mostly been on the backs of the people most affected by these bills. And, you know, I got to give them credit. You know, these children and their families are incredibly brilliant, well-spoken, courageous, and resilient folks who are willing, you know, in some cases, year after year, to show up at the same hearings over and over again to defeat these bills over and over. I think one question we need to ask ourselves is, what kind of childhood is that? You know, if every year you have to go to the state legislature to beg lawmakers not to take away your life, your livelihood, and your civil rights. But I think it's tricky, and it's hard to put that much pressure just on trans children and their parents. Of course, it's understandable that parents are the ones to speak out. But I think if we want to think about the strategy for opposing these bills, we need a much broader coalition. I think actually the defense of trans children against these bills has been fairly weak. I think it's actually conceded a lot to the proponents of the bills. So, for example, there was a viral video of a father in Missouri who was testifying against a bill there that the ACLU tweeted, and it kind of went viral on the internet. It was the must-see video that you had to watch to see this father's heartfelt testimony. But it's a really peculiar kind of testimony. You know, you have this very respectable father and business owner testifying to the lawmakers about how much he didn't like his own trans daughter and how hard he was on her, how much he harmed her for years and denied who she was, and only reluctantly, after a lot of years of hardship, came around to embracing her. And so that was his defense, was basically, I understand that you're transphobic too, but you have to respect the fact that I have the right to raise my daughter any way I want. And it's just sort of the weakest argument we could make. It concedes so much transphobia to the other side. And so I think one thing I would like to see is a broader coalition of folks who are invested in justice showing up and seeing this as their fight, right? If you are invested in abortion rights and reproductive rights, this is your fight. These bills are almost exactly the same as anti-abortion bills. They way overstep government authority. You know, Arkansas, only a few days before it passed its anti-trans healthcare bill, passed another anti-abortion bill that the governor signed. Of course, it's widely expected to be defeated in the courts, but there's a logic here. There's a kind of brutality and brutalization, and a hope that eventually it will make its way to the Supreme Court. So I think there's actually a broad coalition of people who might feel invested and want to show up and support trans youth, even if they don't have trans kids or know a lot of trans people or feel super comfortable with the ins and outs of trans identity, that's okay. You know, standing up for the dignity and personhood of children and their right, you know, to grow up safe and affirmed, I think is something we can all get behind. But more importantly too, there's a lot at stake here. You know, the folks who are on the same side of this debate as the Republican legislators include a wide swath of extremist groups, talking, you know, white nationalists, sort of anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, anti-immigrant groups, and a lot of trans, anti-trans feminist groups, you know, that are ostensibly progressive, but come down very hard and right wing. And a lot of authoritarian political movements are using trans people as their scapegoat, right? And are suggesting that we need to punish and basically expel trans people from civil society and from public life in order to secure the nation or to secure, in some cases, their sense of racial, the racial domination that they want to bring about in this country. So I think when we look at that broader coalition, we need to meet that challenge with a broad coalition of progressives who understand that, yeah, abortion rights, bills about guns, and bills about voting rights are all interconnected in this legislative session. They all are sort of functioning on the same idea that it's okay for the government to take away the individual rights of whole groups of people in order to pursue more regressive authoritarian agendas and actually withdraw the public health from the responsibility of government, right? We're talking about government banning healthcare, right? We're talking about government making it impossible to receive an equal public education. These are really core issues about the future of democracy in this country, especially after this now over a year-long pandemic, where we've seen what happens when government fails to provide healthcare and fails to provide for the welfare of people. It hits marginalized communities harder. We've had over 500,000 deaths, and those have disproportionately fell on working class people, in communities of color, and healthcare workers, in, you know, nurses, for example. And this is kind of the logic in which I want these bills to be seen. This is the context in which we're fighting and struggling right now. So I think in terms of how to, you know, build on the success of South Dakota, I think we really need to broaden our coalition and see trans rights as integral to a broader agenda for democracy and justice and, now, and the public good in this country.
On Wednesday, March 31st, which is Trans Day of Visibility, Trans Gender Day of Visibility, President Joe Biden issued the first presidential proclamation. He also has appointed Rachel Levine, who became the first, as assistant health secretary, she became the first transgender woman to hold a cabinet post in the country, and, you know, won Senate confirmation narrowly. How important is that visibility? And also, the second part of the question is, do you see the Equality Act, as it was just passed by the House, being able to address some of these issues from a federal level and kind of nip the state-by-state efforts in the bud?
Yeah, it's true that the Equality Act, if it were to be passed, and I have to say I'm very pessimistic about its chances in the Senate right now, if it were to be passed, it would be an immense help here because it would preempt, right, and overrule some of these state bills. Which, you know, I have to say, I think on their face, the state bills are so unconstitutional, it's unlikely they'll ever be enforced. But in any case, obviously, the Equality Act would be a great help. You know, and I appreciate the Biden administration's attention. You know, certainly the confirmation of Dr. Levine from my home state of Pennsylvania is a really welcome one. And she's certainly a fierce advocate for trans children. I think part of the problem here is that visibility is actually also one of the causes of harm. It's trans people's hyper-cultural visibility over the past few years that has created this vulnerability where now we're witnessing such an intense backlash, right? And people are mistaking trans people's cultural visibility for the idea that actually maybe they didn't exist until now. And so it's okay to be so suspicious and punitive and hard on them, right? And so one of the things I'm a little alarmed by, I have to say, I appreciate the president's proclamation. I appreciate his verbal commitment to transgender inclusion and rights. But I would like to see a lot more leadership from Democrats on this issue. You know, I noticed that there's a way in which a lot of Democrats are still very much invested in kind of representation or visibility politics, right, saying that we support trans people, saying that trans people exist, right? And those are nice words, but you know, the specific motive of this bill in Arkansas is to ensure that trans people don't exist by preventing their development out of childhood. We are talking about an extremist set of measures here meant to erase a whole population of people. We need much more than visibility. It's not going to save us. In fact, ironically, you know, in relation to the Trans Day of Visibility, many trans activists, particularly Black trans women and trans women of color like myself, have been pointing out for years that visibility actually endangers a lot of trans women of color. We become more hyper-visible, but not in a way that leads to our acceptance. We become the higher targets for forms of violence, while some narrow, acceptable, respectable versions of trans people are welcome and included in the media. So I really think Democrats need to think about how much is tied up in this moment, right? You know, saying that you support trans rights is excellent, but first of all, you need to step up and, you know, make it clear that these state bills are unacceptable, they are unconstitutional, and that the federal administration will do whatever it can to, you know, to make sure that these don't end up becoming the law of the land. But I also think we need to hear from progressive groups and progressive leaders more robustly on what trans people need. We need civil rights, but we need so much more than that. The right to access healthcare is a very narrow right if not that many people get into those doctor's offices. And that's the case with trans children, right? The amount of children who even have access to the kind of healthcare that's being banned is minuscule.
Right. It the remains- sports angle is one aspect of the bills, but the access to medical care and doctors is another aspect that is literally specifically being targeted, which is just unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, I think we need to start calling out these bills for what they are. It's not an even debate. You know, the transphobic side has really a kind of stranglehold on most of the messaging here. See, really salacious, kind of sexualizing, sensational moral panic language being invoked. And I don't really see Democratic groups and progressive groups really fighting back and calling that out for what it is and saying, this is a red line. We're not going to accept the eradication of trans people from this country. We're not going to accept them being completely dispossessed of their rights, but we're also going to advocate for the things that trans people need that a wide swath of working class people need. Free healthcare.
So just right? understanding that the justice. Rights of transgender people are very much in the middle of the spectrum, part of the spectrum of the rights that all Americans need, could use. Healthcare, such an important one, as you've said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jules, for joining us today. I know that you're a signatory to a letter that a number of educators will be releasing later this week, denouncing the slew of the record-breaking number of anti-trans bills that the GOP is advancing at the state level. And we'll post a link to that when we get access to it. Thank you so much and good luck to you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Jules Gill Peterson, associate professor at the University of Pittsburgh. She's the author of the award-winning book, Histories of the Transgender Child. We've been discussing the record-breaking number of transphobic bills that GOP-led states have introduced in the first 3 months of this year alone. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.